Welcome to Goodwill Judging. My name is William Kennedy, and over the last 30 years, I've been a judge in the courts of the English criminal justice system. This podcast chronicles many of the remarkable things I've seen and learnt. The cases, the people, the obscure parts of the law. Come with me as I uncover and divulge some of the most bizarre, tragic, and darkly humorous moments of my career. And remember, the law, like the citizens it aims to protect, never ceases to surprise.
Hello, Willie.
Hello, Thomas.
Good to see you again. How's your week been?
Oh, good. Thank you very much.
Good. You've certainly caught the sun.
Yes. Well, it's been quite pleasant.
Who won golf today?
Not me, sadly, but never mind.
Brilliant. Okay, so last week we were talking a lot about your first day, and you sort of started talking about an interesting case that you came across involving Messrs. Roy and Albert. Would you care to elaborate?
This all happened after the autograph buttock moment that I mentioned in the last podcast.
How could we forget?
And whilst we were waiting for the rest of the day for her to appear again. But leaving that aside, this case involved Charlie and Albert and Roy. Now, let me explain. Charlie and Albert were born in 1920. They were born to mums who worked in a factory in East Ham, and the family homes were about 100 yards apart. The mums were good friends, and so, of course, Charlie and Albert became best mates. They started off in primary school together, they went to secondary school together, and in those days, secondary schools taught boys like that metalwork and ironwork, and Charlie and Albert were both very good with their hands. So they left school and they went to work in what was then quite a small local engineering company. It became much bigger as the years went by, but they were working there happily until 1939, when, of course, war broke out. Each of them volunteered. Each of them was allocated a place in the same regiment, a tank regiment, where they were particularly useful because, of course, they were good with their hands. They saw service all over Europe. Mercifully, on no occasion was either of them seriously injured or indeed killed. And, of course, in 1946, they were demobbed. One of the first things they did was to apply for allotments from the local council at East Ham, and they were allocated allotments side by side. In those days, there were quite strict rules about what you could build by way of a hut on the allotment that you had, but they worked out exactly what they could build, and of course, they built them side by side.
Well, that's because they were good with their hands.
Absolutely right. They loved their allotment. They used to go down there, sit and talk and remember things that had happened, but they used to grow things, and it was the centre of their leisure time.
How absolutely lovely. It sounds like, sounds so charming.
It was great. They both retired in 1985. They were 65 then, and it meant they had more time to sit at their allotment sharing old stories like old men do. In 1993, Charlie began to cough. In 1994, he died of lung cancer. Albert was completely decimated, but he used still to go to the allotment, sit there. He'd also make sure that Charlie's allotment looked tidy, and he'd sit there and remember. One day, he was sitting in his allotment, and a voice over the fence said, "Yeah, mate." Albert looked up. "I'm Roy," said this man. "I've got this allotment." He said, "Cool. How'd you pull out with that miserable little act? Oh, I should be replacing that." And within days, men came and knocked down Charlie's hut and put up a great big hut. It was a big hut, probably bigger than the council then allowed. Not only was the hut big, Not only was it so big that it actually managed to deflect some of the sun that used to shine on Albert's allotment. But Roy loved his hut. He had some cow horns appearing on the front of it. He had signs all over it. He had pub signs. He had curtains at the windows. And what he really liked was his radio. And he'd come down with his battery-operated radio, and he'd play music all the time, very loudly. Well, this went on for a year or so. Eventually, Roy was not satisfied with his radio, and he managed to buy a machine, again battery-operated, that played tapes. And it was a much more powerful machine because he could really make a lot of noise with it. He also discovered how much he enjoyed bonfires. And although there were rules that stopped bonfires, he would come down early in the morning and light a bonfire. And it was extraordinary. The smoke always seemed to go over Albert's allotment. Eventually, Albert and he spoke. What exactly was said was a matter of some dispute. But Albert said that he said to him very politely, "Roy, could you turn your music down, please? If I hear the green, green grass of home again, I think I shall go mad." What happened next was not in dispute. Roy pushed Albert. Albert fell over Albert's own wheelbarrow and damaged his shoulder on a nearby stone.
How old would Albert have been at this point?
Albert was 74 or 5. Anyway, Roy, of course, was prosecuted and was charged with assault occasioning actual bodily harm. And the case came before Andrew Brooks as the judge and me as the observer on my very first day. First of all, Albert went into the witness box and told his story, how it all happened. He was cross-examined by Roy's barrister, who suggested that it was he, Albert, who tried to attack Roy, that he'd obviously wanted to do him harm. Albert said that wasn't so. Then, of course, Roy gave evidence on his own behalf. It was Albert, he said, who was foul-mouthed and came at him, wanting to punch him, and all he'd done was to push him gently away. The jury took 25 minutes to convict Roy. There was no doubt that Roy was guilty. Good. And Andrew Brooks fined him £1,000, which was a lot of money in those days, and also made a compensation order in favour of Albert for £1,000. Roy had to pay all the costs. When that had been done, Andrew Brooks called Albert forward and said, "Mr. X, I've watched you throughout this trial. I know this has been a strain for you. Thank you very much for coming here and for giving the jury your story. I hope things will be better for you in the allotment in future." "Oh, that's all right, Judge," said Albert. "Things have been a lot better for the last 2 months." "Really?" said Andrew Brooks. "I'm very glad to hear it. Why was that?" He said, "Well, things started to improve when I set fire to his shed and burnt it down." Andrew Brooks did not pause. He looked at Albert and simply said, "Thank you very much for your service. I wish you a safe journey home."
That is so lovely. Andy Brooks is sounding more and more like Qui-Gon Jinn with these stories that you come in. You won't know that reference, obviously. Thank you for your service. Wow, yeah.
Andrew was a man who understood ordinary people and could relate to them without any difficulty. But there you are. I watched as Albert head high, still wearing the medals that he'd worn throughout the trial, marched solemnly to the door and went home.
Oh, wow. That is so brilliant. What a charming story. It's sort of, oh.
Just goes to show you that you can never, ever anticipate what other subtle things that can suddenly happen.
God, blimey. I suppose it must be slightly frustrating, I suppose, when you don't know what happens after you meet all of these very interesting people.
No, I'd like to think that Albert went back to the allotment. I'd like to think that Roy probably gave it up, because the loss of his shed would have been a very major blow for him. And also having to pay, which was a lot of money in 1995 out, and the costs, which were probably far, far more than the fines and compensation. Roy probably, I think, gave allotments up.
I mean, allotments are coming a lot more back in vogue these days. I mean, I've applied to be going on an allotment, and there's like a 5-year waiting list.
There is. I mean, unfortunately, immediately after the war, there was a lot of open land which needed to be dealt with, and it was therefore very, very easy to get an allotment. But it's something that I think gives so many people so much pleasure. You know, Thomas, because you're a good grower. You grow things, and when things grow, it gives you enormous pleasure. And I think that, I'm sure it's all entirely proper, but no, I'm like, it was a lovely, lovely story. Albert was a lovely old man, and I was open-mouthed with admiration at the way the whole thing went. It was great. It was a great start to jury trials and to seeing how justice is done, not necessarily by the court, but often by the situation in which people are found.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to imagine, if there was a film made about Albert, who would play him? I think I know who it would be.
Go on then. Who do you suggest?
Well, immediately springs to mind Michael Caine.
Well, yes, that's probably right. Michael Caine would have been very good. Yes, he would be brilliant doing it. Yes, that's a really very good thought. I wonder who Roy would be. Gosh. Well, I think probably we leave listeners to cast it for themselves.
Maybe Vinnie Jones? No. I like Minnie Jones.
I mean, Roy wasn't necessarily violent. He was just, I mean, I don't know what...
Inconsiderate.
Yes, I don't know what... I mean, he was just someone who felt he was entitled. He'd got his own... I'm not quite sure what business Roy was in, but he felt, I think, that he was a success, and he expected other people simply to do what he said and to allow him to do what he wanted. And of course, as we know, that's the sort of person who occasionally comes very unstuck.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, that's a lovely story. I haven't heard that in full before. Whilst that was a very uplifting story, I feel like we've done a few now of some, you know, quite sweet, quite funny and heartwarming stories. But that wasn't the whole of your experience.
A tiny, tiny part in the last years that I said I was doing almost exclusively murders, rapes, and sex offences. And there's very little humour in that. But of course, there are always stories of people who triumph in the face of adversity. Next time, I'll tell you about a murder trial which had about it so much that was decent, so much that was kind, but nevertheless ended in a tragic death. But that's for next time.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Well, thank you, Willie. That's a goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me, Thomas. Take a look at the notes for a summary of the show and all the important links. And if you've liked this episode, I'd very much hope that you subscribe and share with whomever you think might also enjoy it. Should you wish it, please leave a rating and review, as it helps other people discover the podcast. That's it for now, but I'll be back soon with more tales of goodwill judging.